A major force in federal contracting turns to a top Pentagon official. The Professional Services Council, which represents hundreds of companies that do business with the federal government, yesterday named David Berto as its next CEO, succeeding Stan Soloway. Berto departs as Assistant Defense Secretary for Logistics and Material Readiness. Before that, he was Senior Vice President at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He joins me now with where he hopes to take the council. Mr. Berto, welcome back to radio.
Good morning, Tom. It's good to be here.
What is the attraction for the Professional Services Council to someone so close to the end of a term here?
Well, I think I'm close to the end of my own term, if you will. It's an opportunity within the budget constraints that we certainly face to recognize how much the government depends on contractors to achieve its missions, more important than ever in many ways. And obviously, contractors can help the government deliver cost-effective solutions. And one of the remarkable things to me is the degree to which the Professional Services Council has always been committed to helping the government achieve those goals and missions. So I'm really looking forward to helping to relaunch the council and to focus more than ever on those government needs and on the kind of the open and competitive process that will allow contractors to best meet those needs in a cost-effective way.
It's been an interesting time for contractors the last few years because of the, 13 or 14 executive orders from the White House that have changed contractors almost as a class relative to companies in the private sector, with rules and regulations not really related to federal contracting per se, like minimum wage and human trafficking. What's ahead for dealing with all of that?
I think you raised an interesting point that contractors who support the federal government have to actually bridge two worlds. They have to be competitive and capable in a global commercial world in terms of competing for talent, in terms of being able to manage and compete for the financial resources necessary. At the same time, they actually have to be held to a much higher standard because they are serving the American people through the government, and so they have to comply with a lot of requirements that don't necessarily penetrate the global commercial market in the same way. So you have to bridge both worlds, and that makes the advocacy of the Professional Services Council all the more important.
And, of course, the Pentagon in the last number of years, and you've been there the last couple of years, has had its own difficulties with respect to how it handles its civilian workforce, to workforce reductions in the armed services themselves and on the civilian side. So how does it look from inside, looking out at industry? What does the Pentagon feel that, from the point of view of logistics and readiness, it needs the most from industry?
Well, it's not just the Pentagon, really. Across the federal government, ever since the Budget Control Act in 2011, there's been a growing mismatch between the requirements of the missions the government has to achieve and accomplish and the amount of resources available. That's felt, obviously, internally with respect to the government workforce and externally with both the dollars and the requirements for contractor support. So it's true in DOD, but it's also true across the government.
Now, from a organizational standpoint, the Professional Services Council has been very successful. What is your plan? What do you have a vision yet for where you think the council needs to go?
Well, as you know, Tom, I've been in this business for a long time, and I've come at it from a variety of angles. I've been a contractor. I've been in the government. I've analyzed it from an academic point of view and from a think tank point of view and participated across the board. The council has always stood out for decades now as a model of the right kind of blend of analysis and public policy and advocacy. And so it was very attractive to me when Stan announced that he was leaving. My reaction was, what a loss for the council, but it's certainly proving to be a good opportunity for me. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm quite excited about it.
Do you think that it's possible to grow the council in terms of numbers of companies? Because almost everybody, I think, that needs to be or wants to be involved might be there now.
Well, that's an important question. I actually haven't had the chance yet. I don't actually start until the end of March, so I haven't had a chance to look at the membership list, but that's one of my first questions.
Give us some advice for extricating oneself from federal service when you're going to the private sector, because I think that's something that's going to be happening to a few people in the next few months.
This is a very difficult decision for me. I've been honored to have been selected by President Obama to serve in this position. The Defense Department is a great place to work. I'm working under a great team of leaders in Dr. Carter as Secretary and Bob Work as the Deputy Secretary and Frank Kendall as the Undersecretary for Acquisition. As you know, I've known all of the undersecretaries back to the point where the position was created, and this is as good a leadership team for these areas as I've ever seen. I leave with a lot of heartfelt regret, and you never finish the work you have to do. But the opportunity for the Professional Services Council is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime chance for me. As you know, Stan was here for 15 years, and before him, there was a lot of longevity. So you have to balance the loss that you leave behind with the opportunity to continue to serve the government from this position.
We're speaking with David Berteaux. He is the new CEO of the Professional Services Council. And I wanted to ask you something internal at the Pentagon. Again, you're Assistant Secretary, you're leaving as Assistant Secretary of Defense for Logistics and Material Readiness. How does that position interact with the ATL, Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology?
Well, logistics has been part of the acquisition undersecretary ever since it was created in 1986. And there's a very solid connection at a couple of levels. One, of course, is much of our logistics is acquired through contracts, either through contracted services or through contracted spares and parts and capabilities. So you got a direct connection there from the acquisition and procurement process. There's also a very strong connection in terms of support costs, because as you know from and many of your listeners know from guests that you've had on this show, 60 or 70 or even more, a higher percentage of your total cost of ownership of anything is after it's been fielded in the operation. And so there's a direct connection both in the overall process, the acquisition and procurement process, and then specifics related to each program between logistics and acquisition and procurement.
Because there are some big acquisitions that are just barely in their infancy stage. There's a ground vehicle, there's a bomber coming, and so whatever new practices have been legislated or put into practice by executive order or rule changes have yet really to be proven.
Well, I think that's a great point, because the time frames here are very long, and it's one of the things that, to me, makes the role of Professional Services Council useful, because you have to take the long view across the board here, because the government has to do that as well, and so it helps if we can do that from our side.
Now, nothing inspires more debate than the federal budget, the defense budget alone. People look at it from one of two directions: either look how big it is compared to every other country, or look how small it is compared to the threats we face. From having had a foot and some career in both sides, I guess, and in academia, what do you think is a better way to frame the debate over how big and how much the Pentagon and the defense establishment should spend?
The debate over the budget is really both a near-term question, because obviously we are subject to annual appropriations. That's written into the Constitution, and it's been the way Congress has managed the budget ever since the Republic was created. But you also have to take a much longer view, and there's a variety of ways you can measure the adequacy of the budget, you know, percent of GDP, comparative to other countries. But the real basis is, what is the government trying to accomplish, and how do you provide the resources necessary to do that? Part of the value of contractors is, in fact, that you can really, through an open and competitive environment, make sure that you get the best value for every dollar that you spend, rather than just having an open-ended commitment out there. And so I think that's where a lot of the opportunities come.
And for many of the upcoming initiatives, the government in general, both military and civilian sides, are looking to new technologies from new sources, non-traditional sources. How can the federal government better take advantage of the startups and the new thinking types of companies that might be totally unfamiliar with federal contracting and may not even consider the government worthy of being going after as a business customer?
The government has a number of initiatives underway. You've seen a lot of these fairly high profile. The Department of Homeland Security has an outfit out in Silicon Valley looking to create opportunities. DOD has a similar outfit. It's clear that a lot of innovation in both process technology and in products themselves comes from the commercial global sector. And so the government does have to take advantage of that. We're talking about the budget process. So, you know, you've got a budget cycle that you have to know you want something 2 years in advance of actually buying it, because you've got to biddle into the budget and then get it through the Congress. So one of the real challenges for the government is, how do you take advantage of the technological advantages that a contractor can offer, and yet you have to know what brilliant new idea is going to be there 2 years from now. So that's one of the things that we want to look at and work on.
All right, so you've got 30 days until the next job starts. Are you going to put your feet up, maybe go see some spring training games?
It sounds like a great idea, but I'll be working up until the last minute at the Pentagon before I leave. There's a lot on the plate there.